Tonight, we talk to the lead designer of Neverwinter Nights 2 about their upcoming game. Plus, we know more about the Wii. Finally. All that in your live calls and chat comments on the Bobby Blackwell Show week of September 17th, 2006. Bobby Blackwell Show, you're on the air.
Calling in to chime in about this, Matt.
It's your fault, Doc Wolf. It's you guys who buy these dumb that game.
Bobby Blackwell back at Dragon Con 2005. I am here at Anime Weekend Atlanta 11. I'm here at the Best Buy in Alpharetta, Georgia, talking about the Xbox 360 launch.
DC Dayton, everybody in chat's all going, we didn't buy into the hype. You did buy into the hype, you just didn't buy the system.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, it's Bobby Blackwell.
Hey, Mom, I made another Wii joke. It was not funny. Oh, hello. Sorry, didn't realize you guys were. Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we talk about the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. If you're listening to us live here on All Games Radio, welcome. Sorry for the little late start. I had a little audio troubles that a little reboot just helped and took all those audio troubles away. So you can join us at chat.allgames.com. That's our chat room. I will be reading comments from that chat room all throughout tonight's show. Later on, you'll be able to call our Skype line or our toll-free number. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwell Show, all one word. Or you can call us toll-free, 1-866-880-0156, and your voice can be heard on the air. Or if you're just listening to us on the podcast, you can leave us a voicemail on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show, or you can email me, blackwolf@allgames.com, and your email might be read on the air. And as always, I want to thank Kropotkin for providing the short UK news segment that runs just before this show goes live. It's available as a podcast feed for those who cannot tune in live. Check it out on his website, kropotkin.co.uk. That link and many others discussed tonight are on our website, bobbyblackwolfshow.com. So this week I was playing Lego Star Wars 2 for the Xbox 360, and it's a fun game. I don't particularly enjoy co-op. I thought I would enjoy co-op, playing it with my girlfriend and all that stuff. The camera, I guess it's just, you know, a thing of co-op games, because, I mean, the camera works, but it's just there are some frustrating elements that, you know, if we can't get on the same page, I guess maybe we just don't play well together. I don't know. That might mean something later. I don't know. That's kind of scary. But it is a fun, it's a cute little game and stuff. I look forward to playing it a lot more once I get a little bit more free time, which is probably coming very, very soon for me. But most of the news here this week has been about the Wii. And because this week Nintendo had their big, huge announcement talking all about the stuff that's going to be in the Wii. And how much the Wii is going to cost, when you're going to be able to get a Wii. And people are not happy for some reason. So we're going to get down, we're going to run down the hard facts right here at the beginning, the numbers. The numbers that we have been waiting for probably over a year. The price here in the United States is going to be $249.99. So $250. And it's going to come out here November 19th, which means that, you know, when I was sitting here saying October 18th and, you know, saying that was the date, I was wrong. That's why I'm doing indie podcasting instead of real predictions. Now, it includes one console, which is only going to come in white at launch. It's going to have one Wiimote, one Nunchuck add-on, and it will come with Wii Sports. Now, Wii Sports, it contains tennis, golf, baseball, bowling, and boxing. Only the first three were shown at E3, and I think bowling was shown at this press conference. I don't think anybody's seen boxing yet. Now, as for in the console with the virtual console, there's going to be a point system. And in U.S. dollars, 100 points is roughly about $1. You can get 2,000 points for $20. So it's not as esoteric as the Xbox Live one. NES games, $5. SNES games, $8, and N64 games, $10. I would assume that the TurboGrafx-16 and the Genesis games would also be in the $8 one, but that has not been confirmed. But $5 for that old Nintendo game, NES game, that you can probably spend 99 cents at a flea market to go get. I mean, I guess people will buy it. I mean, people bought $20 Game Boy Advance versions of original NES titles, you know, but That might be a little bit too steep for some people. It depends on the game for me. Would I buy Super Mario Brothers for $5? No. But would I buy maybe the original Final Fantasy for $5 because my copy shuts off after a while? I probably would. I probably would, you know, pay $5 for the original Final Fantasy on Virtual Console. Or, you know, some other long NES game, not something like Super Mario Brothers. Now, as for the real games, the first-party games will all be $49.99. Third parties can obviously set their own price, which a lot of people are immediately just jumping to the $59.99 price mark. Now, the first-party games that are going to be out on launch day, all they've said so far is that Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess, Excite Truck, and Wii Sports are going to be the only three first-party games out. And everybody's looking, you know, the Zelda, yeah, but Excite Truck, and I apparently, I have learned this week that I am probably the only person in the world who liked Excite Truck. I'm also one of the few people in the world who've probably stood there and waited to play Excite Truck at E3. Most people didn't stand there and wait and to try to play it. They just looked at it and said, oh, it's stupid. You know, picking their nose or whatever. And I enjoyed it when I played it. It's, you know, it's nothing groundbreaking. It's not innovative. It's not anything new. But it is fun. Now, how long that will be fun, I don't know. But it is a game that I would pick up and play. And so I'm very excited that it's a launch title. I wish some other things were launch titles before that. But, you know, that one's not a bad one. Third-party games that are coming out, these are going to be out on launch day. Call of Duty 3, Tony Hawk's Downhill Jam, Trauma Center, Second Opinion, Need for Speed Carbon, Madden 07, Elebits, Super Monkey Ball, Banana Blitz, Rayman Raving Rabbids, and Splinter Cell Double Agents. So those are, they're saying that there's going to be 25 games available at launch. So this is just a partial list, and obviously this list can change at any moment. We'll talk about something that has changed at any moment already a little bit later on. And for extra controllers, okay, this is the part that everybody's really upset about. $40 for the Wiimote, which is kind of on par. And then $20 for the Nunchuck add-on. And this is where everybody is all up in arms saying, oh my God, you know, you're screwing us, blah, blah, blah. Now it's as expensive as an Xbox 360, blah, 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 blah. I think I played like 8 or 9 games on the Wii at E3, and only 2 of them used the Nunchuck. And I'm trying to think of what the second one is, because I played Zelda, and I didn't get to play Super Mario Galaxy, but that one's not out at launch, and it's not a multiplayer game. I couldn't think of... Oh, Madden. Madden was the second one that used the Nunchuck. Those were the only two. Everything else was, you know, just using the Wiimote or using the gamepad, the little SNES-style gamepad, but that was the Virtual Console. But most of the games there didn't use that little add-on. But everybody's like, you know, are you going to, you know, everybody's going to buy the Nunchuck with the second Wiimote, and, you know, that's not Nintendo's problem. I mean, not all the games support that controller. And some people are listing some of the other games. I'm only counting the games that I played. And so Hitstun asks, Red Steel. Yeah, that one used the Nunchuck, but I didn't get to play it, and I probably won't buy it, even though it does look pretty good. It's just not the game that I would play. That's for other people. But everybody's like now saying, okay, well, now, you know, you get this, 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 and this, and, you know, now you're up to $400. And I look at the $400 that everybody's comparing, the Xbox 360 Premium, and that only comes with one controller and no games. I mean, granted, if you had Xbox Live, you could download game demos, but if you don't have Xbox Live, if you don't have any online in your house, the Xbox 360, you're going to have to spend more than $400 to get anything out of it because it doesn't come with anything but Hexic. And it only has one controller. And everybody's like, well, you know, once you buy a game for the Wii and then an extra controller and blah, 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 now you're getting to Xbox 360 Premium territory. And everybody's, and I'm like, what are you talking about? Now, one of the things that does kind of bother me about this is that the Wii will not have wired Ethernet built in. And, granted, neither the PS2 or the Xbox or the Xbox 360 had Wi-Fi built in. They all had, at least in the case of the slimline PS2s, they had the wired built in. But, you know, if you wanted to play wireless, if you wanted to have your Xbox 360 on your Wi-Fi network, that was a $100 adapter, $100. And people are like, well, why would you ever do that? And I'm like, okay, so I've got some friends of mine where they do all their computing work upstairs, okay, in one of the spare bedrooms of their house. That's where their router is. Their entertainment center is down in the basement with the bar area and all that stuff, and that's where their Xbox 360 is. Now, they don't want to run a 200-foot Ethernet cable down from where their router is upstairs, where the computers are, down to the Xbox 360. So they would be the type to get the Wi-Fi dongle, which is $100. And I guess Nintendo is probably counting that more people are in that situation than they are in my situation, where I do have a 50-foot cable going from my router to my entertainment center, and so I'm just ready to plug in right there, and I don't want to have to buy an extra adapter. So it's a $30 adapter, probably. I think you got to get like a third-party USB 2.0 adapter, and it'll work with it. So $30 if you have wired internet and you don't have Wi-Fi in your house. And, you know, I really wouldn't suggest playing speedy games on wireless internet, especially if there's, you know, walls in between you and your router and stuff like that. So that I kind of agree with, but still, you know, the other way around, the other consoles, you're spending $100 to get Wi-Fi in other consoles. GK128 says, boo for making me pay a few bucks extra to get my Wii online. Hitstun says that his wireless router is upstairs and he gets no Wi-Fi in the basement. Cedabria says, why have any LAN or Wi-Fi on the Wii? Isn't it supposed to be a portable device and not a full-blown console? Actually, it's a full-blown console. You're thinking the DS, which actually has Wi-Fi in it. And Hitstun clarifies that Wi-Fi's range usually isn't good enough for an entire house. That's why you get those little repeaters if you really needed it or something. Uber is in says that the Wii only having wireless is lame. And some other things that came out with the Wii also in this press conference. Now, we here at All Games, we had an article up about this. Aside from providing launch details for the Wii, the press event also delved deeper into the Wii's channel menu feature, which is kind of like what the Wii does when there's no game in it. Each Wii will include a series of on-screen channels that make up the Wii channel menu. The Wii channel menu will serve as the starting point for all of the console's functions, and they will offer a simple interface for letting users pick which games to play, get news or weather, upload and send photos, or even create avatars of themselves to use in actual games. So this is kind of like the E3 press conference where they had Miyamoto and Reggie and, you know, them all playing tennis, and you actually saw their avatars in there. We didn't think that that was something that could come later. The variety of options available through the Wii channel menu motivates both gamers and non-gamers to turn on Wii's power every day. So what they were showing is this Mi feature, M-I-I, Mi, get it? Mi, yeah. Essentially, you can create like an avatar, and that's what is put into the games for you, and it gets stored in your Wiimote. So if you take your Wiimote and nunchuck to a friend's house, then your avatar will show up in the two-player game there, which I think is kind of it's a very interesting way to get people to play together. I don't know how much other stuff you can hold in that Wiimote, you know, how much memory it really does have in it, but, you know, maybe that'll solve the problem. You know, if you have friends that have Wiis, you don't have to buy 4 Wiimotes. Your friends can just all bring their own Wiimote. But I can understand that, you know, people who don't have Wiis, like most of my friends, are going to have to buy Wiimotes and nunchucks and stuff like that. Some other news that came out here, Twilight Princess for the GameCube delayed to December. So it's not going to launch on the same day as the Wii. They're going to wait until December to launch it, which kind of makes sense to me because they dropped GameCube development when they decided to go on the Wii, and they basically went full-blown on developing it for the Wii. And now that the game is done for the Wii, it's done, it's gone gold. It's because Ellen DeGeneres actually gave away a copy of it to a kid who couldn't see. They're now turning to the GameCube, and in order to get it through QA and get it fully tested, bug tested, and all that stuff, they're probably going to have to delay it to December. So that makes sense to me, even though some people are whining. And another thing that came out, all first-party games will be in the 16:9 aspect ratio, which is widescreen, but it'll still only be 480p. So it'll be kind of like the GameCube, which, believe it or not, I'm also fine with, because in the last generation, the current generation, you know, PS2, Xbox, GameCube, before I got my Xbox 360, the prettiest game in my entire library, to me, was F-Zero GX on the GameCube because I have the component cable. So I was getting 480p out of my GameCube, and F-Zero GX went up to 16:9, and it was beautiful. And, I mean, obviously the 360 blows it out of the water, but out of those three consoles, it beat anything that was on my Xbox that was also going through 480p. And I have the component cables for my PS2, and there are some games in there that do 480p. God of War, Shadow of the Colossus, things like that. And this blew them away. It was the beautiful thing. So I don't think it's as big of a deal as everybody makes it out. Oh, no, it's not HD. It can't do 720p. It can't do 1080p. It can't, you know, have 1080 lines on the screen. Oh, no. So I don't think that's as big of a deal, but there are people that complain about that, and those cables are actually pretty expensive. It's like $40 for the S-Video cables and $60 for the component cables, which kind of sucks because they don't need to cost that much. Hopefully they will have the same ports, and I think I went over that last week, so I'm going to shut up about that. Clef5 says, the big thing I noticed about the Wii console is how well everything was controlling comparing to the E3 stuff. Did anyone else see that? And he also said that the picture channel was pretty well done, and it looked like you could actually do some photo editing with it. And I really didn't take a quick, big look at that. I do know there's like a photo thing in there, and there's also this weather feature, which apparently some people are upset about because there's a 3D globe in the Wii weather thing, which probably was like a tech demo. And since it was done, they're like, why don't we just throw that in the system? Just throw that in there. It's good. You know, somebody just probably made it as a tech demo over at Nintendo and everybody liked it. So it's like this big 3D globe that's like accurate to the weather patterns of the world and stuff. And there's also a news channel. Maybe it's going to have RSS. Maybe you'll be able to listen to your podcasts on your Wii. A lot of people are kind of upset that, you know, they're like, well, I thought this was supposed to be only a game machine. Now, it's not going to play DVDs. We thought it was going to play DVDs with a dongle. And the reason that they don't include DVD playback in the console is because there are fees that you have to pay to be able to decrypt the DVDs. Pretty much that's what it is. You got to pay for that ability. That's why everybody's so upset at like DECSS and all of the decryptors that that all like the Linux players use and all that stuff. So that's why Xbox, the original Xbox, they had that little dongle. And the reason is basically the PS2 and the Xbox 360, they have to pay this fee for each device that they sell. However, for the Xbox, they only have to pay that fee for each remote that they sell. And so essentially that's $20 or whatever, $10 or $20 off of the price of the console since they externalize it, because not everybody's going to use their Xbox as a DVD player. So I thought that's what Nintendo was going to do. They're not putting it in the system because it's going to cost $10 extra or whatever. They're going to have to pay $10 for each Wii sold. But I thought they were going to do a dongle that would allow them to do that. But I guess that they're not doing that anymore. Speaking of things that happened and probably shouldn't have been said, the Wii is region-free. That's what Perrin Kaplan said. Hooray, Wii is region-free. It's going to be just like the DS and the PSP. Then Europe came back and said, no? What? So Joystick has reported that, Nintendo's Perrin Kaplan said that first-party Wii games would be free of regional shackles. Well, she never received the internal memo stating the exact opposite. The Wii will not be region-free. Not even a little. Some confusion arose after David Yarnton told the UK press that the system would indeed be region-locked. Now, having region-free games and a region-free system are two very different things. So Joystick contacted Nintendo, and this is the clarification that they got from Nintendo. Quote, we've heard conflicting reports from lots of folks out there, but can tell you that we will be region-encoded, as will first-party software. So for those of you who thought it would be very easy to import games for your Wii, either from over the Pacific or over the Atlantic, no. Don't think so. And StickAxe says, remember, Europe isn't part of the world. Now, you want one, don't you? You want one of these things, right? Well, guess what? GamerAndy.com, a site that recently came back up after hitting a stream of bad luck due to an RSS reader that went bad, they reported that the only way you can reserve a PlayStation 3 or Wii at GameStop or EB Games is to trade in at least $50 worth of games during the week of September 18th. That's tomorrow, guys. That, and you're not guaranteed a console at launch or before Christmas. So I'm going to paste this image into the chat room, and it'll be in our show notes too, but I'm going to paste it in the chat room and then kind of explain what it is. Okay, so GameStop and EB here at the U.S., here's what this thing says. It says, reserve it here 1 week only starting Monday, 9/18. Here's how. Trade in $50 of used product as a deposit on your system. Now, here's the fine print. There's two things of fine print. The first one says, cash or store credit will not be accepted. Reservations of the PS3 or Wii are limited to one reservation or purchase per household. The finer print says all trades must be in working condition and are subject to manager approval. As GameStop cannot control production and shipping issues by the manufacturer, the reservation deposit will only guarantee a spot in line when the PS3 or Wii becomes available. The reservation deposit does not guarantee receipt of a system available to purchase by Christmas. So, here's the thing. So, if people who already like traded in all their games to get the store credit so they could buy the Wii, they're screwed. If they have nothing else left to trade in. Collectors like me who don't like trading in games are also screwed because they're saying we have to give up what GameStop believes to be $100 of our game collection. And GameStop will think that some of our games are $2 or $4 or something like that. And Hitstun has a clarification, and actually I have not gone to my EB. I'm going to my EB tomorrow to clarify this. Hitstun says, I asked at a local EB, and you do not have to trade in to reserve a Wii or PS3. You can pay $50 cash. That's a clarification from Hitstun. I was not able to get to an EB, my EB, my local EB that I do stuff with over the weekend, but they probably wouldn't know anything because apparently they're not really going to know anything until tomorrow when this happens. Clef5 says, yet another reason why not to shop at GameStop. But the Wii, it's not going to be as much of a problem because they're going to have a whole bunch of Wiis at launch ready, and I don't think you're going to have much of a problem. The PS3s, yeah, you're going to have a problem trying to get. What we're going to do now, we're going to, little halfway point, after this break, we will be taking calls about Nintendo's Wii. We do have some other stories coming, you know, one about Microsoft, one about the PS3, but really it's, you know, all about the Wii this week. And but when I was at Dragon Con 2006, I saw Atari's booth, and they actually were showing off Neverwinter Nights 2. They had some demos during the convention in some of the meeting rooms showing gamers all about Neverwinter Nights 2. So I spoke with Josh Sawyer, who's the lead designer, and he agreed to come on the show to talk all about Neverwinter Nights 2, and he also talks about why they do Dragon Con instead and on top of E3, and if all of this hoopla that we've been going over with E3 really hurts them in the end, and his response may surprise you. So you're listening to the Bobby Blackwolf Show on All Games Radio, online at allgames.com.
Bobby Blackwolf here at Dragon Con 2006. I am here with Josh Sawyer, who is the lead designer on Neverwinter Nights 2. They are showing it off here at Dragon Con and doing some previews. It's Monday morning. How have you been? How's your con been?
Oh, the con's been going pretty well. I guess the long hours have been kind of wearing on me since the floor is open a little longer than I'm used to from other cons, but it's been going pretty well. People have enjoyed what they've seen from Neverwinter so far, and we had a pretty good presentation last night that people seem to like as well.
Now, Neverwinter Nights 2 is coming out. What for people who have never heard of the Neverwinter Nights series, probably not PC gamers, what is Neverwinter Nights and what's it about?
Well, Neverwinter Nights 2 is basically, it's a sequel to the original Neverwinter Nights that BioWare made. Obsidian tried to sort of carry on in the tradition of the original, so we've provided a rich official campaign that ships with the game, but the big draw for Neverwinter Nights 2 is really the fact that people can play it online, they can make modules using our tool set that they can host online, host their own servers, have people come and play in the modules that they've made using our tool set. So everything in our official campaign was created using the tools that the end users will receive. So we know that people will be able to create their own campaigns, either set in the Forgotten Realms or, you know, their own custom worlds or whatever, but it's all using the Dungeons & Dragons 3.5 rule set.
So now what has changed between, like, say, look, you know, let's talk about the tool set, because a lot of my listeners are probably going to be playing with the tool set. What's changed between
the first Neverwinter Nights tool set and what's coming in number two?
Well, the tool set for number two, to make sure that we could extend it as much as we wanted to, we actually rewrote the entire thing from the ground up. So the first thing people might notice is that there's, across the board, a greater level of control over every aspect of how they can build their environments. So they can do things like they can build rolling exterior terrains. They're not restricted to using tile sets on the exterior anymore. In terms of placeables, they're not restricted in how they want to put down objects. They can place down things as small as little, you know, tiny books at whatever angles they want to on any sort of structure. They can also group sets of placeables and save them off as what we call prefabs and then use them to populate larger areas. Also, our script assist tool allows people to sort of look up functions a little more easily. And there's really a lot of new things like scaling of objects across the board. So you can scale creatures, you can scale buildings along three axes. You can tint different parts of creatures and buildings. So you really can create an incredible amount of variety in your exteriors and your interiors as well.
Now, is there still like kind of the GM mode that was kind of in the first one where you can have one person being the GM and putting the others through a party?
Well, the DM client is something that people have really, really asked for strongly, and it's something actually we're getting ready to work on right now. It's actually one of the last things we're doing. It won't be available immediately when the game comes out, but it'll be in our first patch for the game, which should be available actually day of release. So, but that's something that, you know, people are really, really passionate about, so we want to make sure that we get it done. But we have to make sure that the game that ships is solid enough that people want to actually DM in it. So
what's the, can you give me a little story, synopsis of the single player campaign that ships with it?
Mm-hmm. So the official campaign story is set around the city of Neverwinter about 5 years after the original game. Some of the original characters come back in recurring roles, but your character is actually a villager from the Mirror of Dead Men from a village called West Harbor. Starts out innocently enough with sort of a problem that emerges in the village, and your character is sort of sent off to City of Neverwinter to investigate why things are going wrong in the Mirror of Dead Men and the surrounding areas. And of course, you become caught up in larger sort of political things with Lord Nashor and other important characters sort of trying to figure out what's going on.
Now, I know that this game has some type of good and evil stuff, but is that really evil, or is it just slightly rude? How evil can you get?
Well, you can be actually extremely cruel in some cases. We have a full-fledged companion system in the game, and that's usually where you'll see a lot of the responses to your good and evil choices coming. People really wanted to see in our official campaign more companion involvement, more like the old Baldur's Gate games and the not so much the Icewind Dale games since those were full party, but the Baldur's Gate games where you had a full host of companions with their own personalities and you could directly control them. So Neverwinter 1 had the henchman system, but in this game you can take direct control of your companions, and also they have a great deal of feedback to the things you do in the world. So for instance, you know, if you're cruel to animals, which you can be in the game, there is one of your druid companions who can become extremely angry at the things that you're doing. I mean, you can also be sort of what people might call vanilla evil, where you are just rude or you're selfish, but we try to give a pretty broad spectrum of responses for people to do things the way they want to do them. We don't want to reduce evil to just saying, you know, I want money for this.
Now, two questions on time for the single-player campaign. First, how long can you spend in character creation?
Well, I guess you can spend as long as you really want, but we see most people that come through here in character creation spend between, if they're going really briskly, they'll spend like maybe 10 minutes. Some people spend like 20 minutes in character creation. It really depends on how much they want to customize things and how much they would just want to use the recommend button. We find that people that are new to it really want to explore every option, especially if they're, you know, sort of D&D educated. They want to look at all the feats they're taking, all the skills they're taking. I think there's, you know, people find that there's a lot of options there for them to play with, both in appearance customization and in just configuring their, you know, basic attributes and everything.
And how long does it usually take to go through the single player campaign?
I think the average player will probably take between 30 and 40 hours. I'm usually pretty reticent to give out figures like that, but lately we've had our sprinters in quality assurance go through it, and the sprinters, what they do is they repeatedly play through the critical path of the game to see if there are any progression breaks, and they've done it dozens of times, and they have what we call kill weapons, where every hit that they make is a kill. They can do it in 16 hours. So if the sprinters can do the critical path as absolutely fast as they can in 16 hours, it's probably a pretty good guess that most people will take between 30 and 40. I think maybe experienced people will shave, you know, like 5 to 7 hours off of that, but I think it's a pretty good estimate.
Now, as for the PC, what are the recommended and or what are the required and the recommended specs for it?
So the minimum specs are a Pentium 4, 2.4 gigahertz with 512 megs of RAM and any video card that supports Shader Model 2. The recommended specs are a Pentium 4, 3.0 or 3.2, I actually can't remember off the top of my head, with a gig of RAM and any video card that supports Shader Model 3.
And when is it coming out?
It's coming out in mid-October.
Now, I got one more question, and it's more about the industry, because you guys are here at Dragon Con, which is a consumer con, you know, the public is let in, and there's been a lot of news in the industry about E3. So, I mean, what's your opinion on what's going on with E3? How is it going to affect Atari and, you know, the promotion of these games?
Well, in my opinion, I've never really been that big of a fan of E3. I think that, in general, it requires an incredible amount of resources from the developer that could probably be better spent, you know. I guess the way I look at it is there's an awful lot of prep for show as opposed to an awful lot of work just getting the game done legitimately. So I think a lot of developers are forced to sort of like scramble and hack things together poorly that they later have to wind up re-engineering and taking out. So I think it's an incredible drain on a lot of developers and publishers. And to be honest, I mean, E3 is really, at least it was supposed to be like a press and retail event, and it has become this incredible consumer draw, but that's not really what it's for. And especially since we're working, you know, right now, especially working on role-playing games and D&D games, which I've always worked on since at Black Isle, I think conventions like this are a lot better because this isn't really as much about the press or retailers. It's mostly about just having people who are really into these sorts of games come and see, you know, hands-on what the game is like, what our tool set is like. So, I mean, if E3 gets scaled back, as far as I'm concerned, that's great. I would rather come to, you know, a couple of these sort of events per year where it's more laid back. There's not quite as much stress. People are a little more understanding. I would rather prefer to come to shows like this, to be honest.
And to just describe real quick the booth that they have here, I'm sure everybody's seen the pictures of like the big E3 booth. This one has about four big stand-up posters, three tables, two with PCs, one with a PSP, and a little table with promotional material on it. And that's all they got here, and that's all they really need for here. And I'm sure it's a lot cheaper than going to E3. So the game looks great. We're going to see it mid-October. What is the website if people want to learn more about it?
www.nwn2.com.
nwn2.com. I am Bobby Blackwolf at DragonCon 2006. Thank you, Josh, for spending some time with us.
Thanks a lot, Bobby.
And I got the Neverwinter Nights before All Games Interactive did. Mm-hmm. Bobby Blackwolf, DragonCon 2006, All Games Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Kropotkin and Hendrix game review.
Whoa, what are you doing? What are you doing?
We're doing a review.
No, we're not. People are listening to the Bobby Blackwolf show, not us, you and I, that is, talking about some game or something. What are you thinking?
We could review the Bobby Blackwolf show.
Do you think that's really a good idea? Do you?
It might have Transformers in it.
Oh, that's it.
I'll take that as a no, then.
No!
Fine. You're listening to the Bobby Blackwolf Show on All Games Radio.
Thank you very much, Kropotkin and Hendrix, the duo that does audio reviews for us here at All Games Radio. The new reviews air in between Orange Lounge Radio, which, by the way, is having their 200th episode tonight. They're old. Catch them on Monday nights here on All Games Radio. But the review airs in between Part A and Part B of Orange Lounge Radio, but we have also just recently put it up as a podcast feed, so it's no longer broadcast only. So you can go to their page at allgames.com. If you see the RSS feed button that's on their page, that's the feed that you put. Or they do have an iTunes page now, so you can check them out. They are reviewing Loco Roco this week. That review just came out today, like a couple hours ago. So it's a hot new review. You can download it and listen to it before we air it here on All Games Radio. So I have opened up my Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show, all one word, or our toll-free number is up, 1-866-880-0156. And as I said, we do have some other news we wanted to cover, but you know, people are more than welcome to call in about anything in the gaming industry, something we missed, something they want to talk about, or if they just want to tell me how wrong I am about Nintendo and the Wii and you know how much I think that it's still a good bargain and it's still a good price for the system, even with all of the extra charges. Microsoft is going to probably have to pay some money. Ars Technica reports that PalTalk, a company based in New York but incorporated in Delaware, sues Washington-based Microsoft in an East Texas court. Okay, so the Eastern District of Texas has jurisdiction over the dispute because, quote, Microsoft has subscribers who reside in the Eastern District of Texas, and Microsoft provides infringing online services to its subscribers in this district, unquote. Now, several Texas districts are well-known judicial hellholes owning to their overwhelming number of guilty verdicts, so it's like a tech-ignorant zone or something like that. That's why they're suing in Texas. In its court filing, PalTalk alleges that Microsoft's Xbox Live, either on the Xbox or the Xbox 360, infringes on two of its patents. The company has suffered damages, quote, in the at least the tens of millions of dollars, unquote, which raises obvious questions about why they've waited 4 years to file the suit, because Xbox Live came out in 2002. The two patents are at issue are the 523 patent and the 686 patent, both of which involve server group messaging. Quote, we have been creating cutting-edge services for the entire history of our company. We are taking an important step to protect our intellectual property rights and continue the important developments that set PalTalk apart, unquote, said Joel Smirnoff, who's PalTalk's president. Now, Microsoft is a company that runs multiplayer game servers alleged to be violating these patents. Don't know how, though, because the initial complaint provides no evidence. And the filing instead describes the PalTalk patents and the dates that Xbox Live went live after five pages of this, blah, blah, blah. PalTalk simply claims that, quote, gameplay on the Xbox or Xbox 360 through the Xbox Live online gaming service infringes on the PalTalk patents, unquote, and then goes on to ask for a jury trial, which they will then actually state how they're infringing. Yeah. StickX says, will people stop suing everyone? Just stop whining already. I agree. One other thing, since, you know, we did the Microsoft, we did the Nintendo, we got to do the Sony. We have to do the Sony news here. GameDaily.biz reports that in a meeting with analysts, Sony Computer Entertainment America has announced the final assembly for the PlayStation 3 will begin by the end of the month. 400,000 units will ship ahead of the console's November 17th launch in North America, and Sony plans to follow that up with another 800,000 units via air freight through the end of the year. They also provide guidelines about the percentage of core versus premium units. I don't know if that's Ars Technica's version or, you know, theirs, so let's talk at Dumbass and OK systems. How about we use that? Okay, so the Dumbass system, which only has the 20-gigabyte hard drive and no HDMI port, and cost $499, only 20% of them will be the dumbass version. And then the OK system, which is the $599 one with the 60-gigabyte hard drives and all the bells and whistles, blah, 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 that's going to be 80% of them. So Sony will have shipped 2.4 million units worldwide in 2006 as opposed to the initial forecast of 4 million. The company still believes that it will hit its goal of 6 million shipped through next March. And they said the monthly PS3 production will be ramped up to 1.2 million units in January when the Blu-ray laser supplies are expected to improve. So, Chrisville1724 says, woot, bashing Sony time. So, yeah. So, if you really wanted a dumbass system, it's going to be hard to get one of those. You're going to have a better time trying to get the OK system. And, you know, you can put your $50 worth of, 40 or 50 Game Boy Advance games that you're going to throw on the counter that you'll get 50 cents each. You know, you'd probably get a OK system. You know, and then it's going to be like you lost the lottery if you wound up getting a dumbass system, you know, because they didn't have any more OK systems. And then one last thing that I wanted to remind everybody about, this really isn't news, but since we've had him on the show before and I wanted to give him a shout out, Video Games Live. We've had Tommy Tallarico on the show. You can go back to January and listen to the very long hour-and-a-half interview that we did live with Tommy Tallarico. Mark your calendar. Thursday, September 21st, which is this coming Thursday, marks the very first show of the second season of Video Games Live. They're coming to the Hollywood Bowl in sunny Southern California with a new and improved show debuting new music and video from Halo 3, Civilization IV and the Hollywood Bowl premiere of the music of Final Fantasy IV, with electronica guru BT opening the show and special guests Steve Vai and Dweezil Zappa performing. This will be a night to remember. Don't miss the show. Video Games Live at the Hollywood Bowl Thursday, September 21st at 8 p.m. And the pre-show festival starts at 5:30 p.m. So if you're out in the Los Angeles area, go out to the Hollywood Bowl and check this out. And, you know, some of this stuff, they're going to show, like, new music and video from Halo 3, which is going to be a big deal. The Civilization IV music, I actually kind of was there when they were trying to get this. The music that they're actually going to be performing is the opening music theme. So if you've had Civilization IV and you've heard the African music theme, whatever, that is the music that they are going to be performing. And I'm actually going to see if I can pull it up here for a little bit, because I don't think he'd mind if I played a little bit of it on the podcast. I hope. This is the one that they're going to be doing with a full chorus and full orchestra, and I wish I could hear this live. Okay, so basically, they've been trying to contact the guy who wrote that, and they couldn't get his attention or something. So, you know, I was actually there at GDC when they're like, we want to talk to you, we want to get your stuff in Video Games Live. So it's really good to see that they got that. Check out Video Games Live if you want. VideoGamesLive.com is their site. Tickets are still available, which is why I've been getting all these notices as we get close to the show. So check it out. Gita says that is the song of the year. And Chrisville says, Video Games Live, come to Detroit, we won't kill you, which is good. Hitstun says, oh crap, I heard Steve Vai. Yeah, Steve Vai is going to be there. Dweezil Zappa is going to be there. It's going to be some good stuff there. So, like I said, Bobby Blackwolf Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. It's going to be weird. We started late and we're going to end early. But that means more people can go over to Orange Lounge Radio and listen to their 200th episode live. Okay, so that's all that we have for this week. All Games Interactive with Scott Rubin and Lawrence Young is live each and every weeknight from the Arena Interactive Lounge in West Los Angeles at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, right here on All Games Radio at allgames.com. We will be back again next week on Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, here on All Games Radio at allgames.com, so you can catch us live and interact with the show. Feel free to leave a voicemail with us on any topic or leave a bumper for using our show on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show. You can also email your thoughts and opinions to me at blackwolf@allgames.com. You can join our official forums at allgames.com to take part in our community. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of our chatters. DC Nate, Gita, Hendrix, Hermdog, Necobun, Tedekin, Burning Paper Sun, Drunk Pandas, Fifth Dream, GK128, Ichiban, Oshi, Rare, Refi, Sub-Z, The Matrix, Toshin, Burr, Chrisville 1724, Cedabria, Clef 5, Crispy, Death God, Ed Ryder, Gav, Hitstun, Holy Cloud Zero, Interlogic, Justinsane, Kazan, Mecha, Sato, Soul Brother Rule, Stickaxe, Stone Raider, TH Clay, Tiger Claw, True, Twinson, Uberfragger, VX Jason XV, and Wee Man. So once again, I wanted to thank everybody for coming out tonight. If you like the show, leave a review on iTunes. Leave a good review on iTunes. We need them, because one guy didn't like the show. I think he made me cry. See you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed on tonight's broadcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of All Games Productions. This file may be freely distributed provided the original content is unedited and proper attribution is retained. For more information about All Games programming, go to www.allgames.com.